It was just under 3 months ago today, in early December, that Kansas City was the center of soccer in the United States.
Revelle Palmer to keep RSL alive, to deny Kansas City one more time. Can he do it? Palmer! He has it! And the trophy belongs to Kansas City!
Sporting Kansas City defeated Real Salt Lake in penalty kicks to win the MLS Cup, the championship of Major League Soccer. The title wrapped a bow around one of the most stunning turnarounds in professional sports. Once bottom feeders, Sporting KC had truly arrived as a championship team and a franchise on the move. Sporting KC starts its title defense on Saturday with their first match in Seattle. But regardless of what happens on the field this year, the franchise has already won. It has staying power here in the city. So let's talk about what that means for the city and what it means for soccer. Jake Reed is Sporting KC's chief revenue officer. Jake, thanks so much for coming on the show.
No problem. Glad to be here.
So, Jake, the team, as I said, won the championship in December, and the season starts on Saturday. What's it like for the organization to start the season as defending champs?
It's fantastic. You know, it's hard to believe it's starting again. It's only been a few short months, but it's great. You know, everyone loves going in defending champs. Certainly, we're excited. It'll be a tough match at Seattle, but I think the guys are ready for the challenge.
So, I mentioned the turnaround and the growth. You know, I read an article in the Sporting News that before the team ditched the Wizards name years ago and that logo and that brand, that the Kansas City franchise here ranked 19th in merchandising revenue, even though the MLS at that point, it was a 17-team league. So the Wizards ranked below an expansion team and generic MLS merchandise. So, you know, first of all, how can that be? And what's the growth been like? Where do you rank now?
Yeah, I don't know how that can be. It's pretty astonishing. But yeah, it's true. I think, you know, we used to joke about we'd go to the league meetings and we were literally bottom in every category. And I think you look at where we are now and credit to our ownership group. You know, we've got five local guys who've just been fantastic for helping turn this thing around. And, you know, the merchandise is just a small piece of the puzzle. But, you know, a very timely one. Last night we unleashed the new kit for this year. And I think it's gotten rave reviews. We finished second in the league last year in merchandise. So, you know, we expect that to hopefully maintain you know, where we're at this year. And it's been quite the turnaround and a lot of hard work. But it's hard to believe it's only been, you know, really 3 years now.
So, talking about that turnaround, you know, the franchise, it wasn't drawing fans. At one point, it was playing in a minor league baseball stadium. It wasn't making money. And now it has this kind of deep connection with local fans. It's had success on the field. It's got a glittering, still new stadium. I mean, it really has been quite a turnaround. So how did that happen? Where did that come from? What's the genesis of that almost Phoenix rising from the ashes kind of scenario?
Yeah, I think a lot of hard work and a little bit of luck along the way. And certainly, you know, we've always had a fantastic fan base. And I think, you know, if you look at where we were in Arrowhead and then Community America Ballpark and the fans that we had, I think, you know, we always needed our own home. And I think that was a long time coming. And when we got that, that was really the game changer for us. It allowed us to go out and be aggressive and grow the fan base first and foremost and fill the stadium. And that was really our goal all along. And we knew if we could get that atmosphere to where we wanted it, kind of everything else would follow after that. So I don't know that there's a magic arrow that we just shot and it worked. I think, you know, you look at the first year in the stadium, we were getting great crowds. The team was on the road the first 10 games and they had won, you know, one game. I think we had 4 points coming home, if I remember correctly, but I know we were in last place. And then, you know, we came home and it was a totally different ball game and we finished first in the Eastern Conference that year, and from there on out, we really never looked back.
I want to talk a lot more about kind of being at home and that, as I said, glittering stadium and the plans for that. But for now, Sporting KC and this turnaround has been seen kind of as a model for franchises across, you know, both professional soccer, but even bleeding into other sports as well. So how much attention do you as an organization pay to that? You know, does that inform your thinking at all about being a model, about testing things that you can then export elsewhere? How does that work?
Yeah, I don't know that we pay a lot of attention to it, but we're very cognizant of it. I think, you know, our ownership has always made a point, and I think from day one, we wanted the fans to feel like they own part of the team. And I think that was really our goal setting out, was to have a membership base that felt like they were involved in the decisions, that had a voice. And I think we've done a good job of that. These two guys may not agree with me sitting to my left and my right here, but I think for the most part, we try to engage the fans as much as possible and get their feedback and help that guide our decisions. And I think where sports teams go wrong is when you start thinking that, you know, you can make decisions and the fans will follow regardless. And it's not true. And we never want to take that for granted. You know, even coming off an MLS Cup, we're never going to have the attitude that we've made it and now we're good to go. But yeah, we get a lot of calls. A lot of teams have come in. Certainly the stadium has been a huge draw. But, you know, I think the membership and the fan base is really where we base kind of all of our decisions around and how does that impact them.
So you mentioned these guys who are sitting here in the studio, and I think we had a couple smiles when we were playing that tape of the MLS Cup win. Let's bring them in here. They're the voices of some of the people who follow the team closely. So we'll start. Thad Bell is the managing editor of the Daily Wiz, which is SB Nation's Sporting KC blog. So thanks so much for coming in, Thad.
Thank you for having me.
And Sean Dane is leader of the KC Cauldron, a coalition of Sporting KC fan groups. So thanks for being on the show, Sean.
Of course.
So let me start with you, Sean, as the leader of the KC Cauldron, all of these fan groups together and organizing. You know, Jake, I think, just mentioned we want to have the fans in mind when we make these decisions, even coming on in as defending champs. Obviously, things are working. How much do you feel like fans have warmed to this ownership? How much do you feel like that fans have a voice in the operations of this team?
You know, obviously, my opinion skewed because I have probably a more direct access on a personal basis, but the whole point of what the Cauldron is as an independent supporters organization is to represent that general membership in a one-on-one situation with Jake, and that is that relationship, whether it's Jake or Andy or Rob or any of the guys involved in the front office, is a very good one. We work very closely together, and you know, we don't always see eye to eye, but I think that what differentiates our relationship between a lot and the league is we've always been able to find a common ground to move forward. And it particularly because they listen to us. And that has happened since the early phases of asking us what we wanted in the stadium to this year and looking at, you know, how would you guys improve the stadium fare? What kind of food would you like to see? What offers you more value as a season ticket holder? I mean, these are specific questions that we've been asked, and I think that our input is taken seriously for sure. And I think that is one of the things that makes this relationship a good one and certainly beneficial and different than other sports out there.
Well, that's exactly where I wanted to go. Jake, as far as getting input from fans, I mean, I don't want to say that this is you know, curing a disease, curing cancer or anything like that. But this is a pretty revolutionary idea. I think fans both here in Kansas City, and I'm not going to point fingers, might say that there are organizations that don't have the fans in mind and certainly don't actively seek out their input. But, you know, across professional sports, this is a common thing that you hear from fans is that, you know, we pay our good hard-earned money, we buy a jersey, we come see the team, we support the team through thick and thin. And yet at every turn, the organization is just kind of looking out for itself and looking how to make money. So how do you go about kind of creating that organizational philosophy with the fans in mind? And what kind of concrete things, I think Sean was mentioning a few, but how do you go about literally physically reaching out to fans and putting that into practice?
Yeah, I think, you know, it starts at the top for our organization. You look at Rob Heineman, who's our CEO and he's one of our owners. I think last night's a perfect example. We're at the kit launch and announcing the new jersey, and Rob has the MLS Cup and he just passes it into the crowd for the fans. And I think, you know, what differentiates us for a lot of sports teams, both here in town and out of town, is that, you know, we've got local ownership that is here. And I think it's very important to Rob to get that feedback and implement it. And these aren't guys that are flying in for game day, then flying out. They're living here. Their families are here. Their businesses are here. So I think that, you know, filters down to the rest of the organization. And it's something that he has made a huge point on. And it's very important to us to make sure that not only are we asking, but we're actually implementing that. And I think that's the big difference is a lot of sports teams will ask the fans, hey, what do you want to do and how should we proceed? And it's, you know, more of a check in the box than anything. I think with us, you know, I think you could ask our guys, there's noticeable changes that when they've given us feedback that we have implemented rather than just kind of nod and say, yeah, we'll get to it when we get to it.
So can you, is there a good example that you give when you think of, you know, we had planned to do X, but we heard from the fans that was going to be a problem, so we did Y?
Yeah, there's probably a few that I can relate to with Sean here. I think, you know, last year we had this genius idea that we would do a cashless system in Members Club to start the year. And
that was cashless?
Cashless,
yes. Card only?
Yeah, we thought, you know, lines would speed up and it would be good for everyone. And I think the idea was great. Turns out the execution, not as much on game day. And I got a call from Sean the next day. We talked through it, and we implemented a totally different system the next game. There's multiple examples in the clubs during the game where, whether it's food options or how we've serviced things or where the lines might be queuing up too much, where, you know, those guys always have an open line. They'll give us the feedback, and I think we're pretty quick in changing that, too. I think that's the other thing, is we don't wait a long time. It's game by game. It's very fluid, and I think we always adjust. And to Sean's point, it doesn't always work. We always try things that sometimes we think is a great idea, and it doesn't actually come to fruition as we would envision, but we're not afraid to say, hey, we screwed up, and let's try something else.
So, Thad Bell, you cover Sporting KC at the Daily Wiz. How has this transformation that we've talked about played out? I mean, I don't want to gloss over history, that there was some success on the field at the beginning of the 2000s as well, but then a really kind of dark period. So there's this transformation on the field, but obviously the team has, you know, brought in some great players, but also off the field by really staking a claim as a serious team here in Kansas City and as something that people talk about. You see bumper stickers, you see people wearing jerseys, kits, you know, fleeces, that kind of thing. How has this transformation played out from your vantage point covering the team?
It's really been a perfect storm for Kansas City. It started when the new ownership took over. They set that winning mentality that we want to have that success on the field, that relationship with the fans. Manager Peter Vermes often talks about how the fans are now a cult. They show up for 2,000 people show up just to see a new jersey unveiled last night, and they sell like 300 of them or so. They have that buy-in. The players are interested in the community. They're always out there. They're approachable, unlike maybe some athletes in other sports. There's a lot of Kansas City guys on the team. There's the new stadium. Everything just kind of came together as the perfect storm for changing Kansas City from being in the nether regions of soccer to it's one of the soccer cities in Kansas, in the United States now.
And I want to say, I think what Thad just mentioned about the players being accessible, that is a huge thing and very different than any other major league sport. These guys really are, and part of it's because they're not making, you know, $100 million a year, but they are still part of this community more than I think any other professional sports players in any league. And that really helps people become quickly connected to them.
Well, so that's a question, brings up a question I want to pose to all three of you. And Thad Bell, let me start with you as you're covering the team. So we're talking about all this fuzzy good feeling over the last year or two that's been created. But, you know, we've seen time and time again across professional sports, but also elsewhere, that success can sometimes, you know, breed, can have organizations turn away from what made them so successful. You know, jacking up ticket prices, trying to capitalize on that success, you know, can often have adverse effects. So how do you see that playing out, you know, this year and in the next few years with this almost sudden success? And, you know, is that going to be something that's going to be able to keep that momentum going?
I do think they'll keep that momentum going. Obviously, like Jake said, they make mistakes. They try things, and things will, the fans will let them know when they're screwing it up. And sometimes they'll know when nobody's buying the ticket or buying the jersey or whatever it might be that they screw up. But they're willing to try things, and they're going forward with that. Sporting's built that fan base now, though, that's going to be pretty easy to get along with for a while. I mean, they're still going to complain when the team doesn't win. There's still going to be a percentage of calls for the manager's head every time they lose, you know, that sort of thing. But they have a little bit of a relationship now with Kansas City, so it'll go a little smoother. It'll continue on for a little bit longer.
Sean Dane, you're, like I said, leader of the KC Cauldron, these fan groups. How are you feeling about that? Do you feel like
I feel like there's kind of two things here. One, they've got a difficult task ahead of them because they have set the bar so high for fans in this city that they've got to continue to meet that. And so that's pressure that they've put on themselves. And I think that everybody in that organization is well aware of it. And certainly it seems to me at the forefront of their minds to continue having that reputation. And secondly, one of the things that we try to do as the Independent Supporters Association is continue to hold their feet to the fire. And when there are those, just like Jake said, you know, that incident with the cashless system, I immediately called him. I was like, man, this is not going well for you. How do we fix this? And so they very quickly responded to that. And as long as they have that ability to continue listening to us on a very personal level, I don't see that changing, and I would hope it didn't, because what we try to do is act as a union for the fans and really be the ones to say, look, guys, this is, we're going to kind of rally everybody together if we feel these changes aren't in the benefit of the fans. So far, every time we've thought we were going to have to we really need this to happen, they've already been ahead of us. So we'll see down the line, but I don't predict that changing much, at least with the people that I know involved at the top of the organization right now.
Jake Reed, Chief Revenue Officer. Good problem for Sporting KC to have, but potentially a problem nonetheless.
Yeah, I think the one thing we've always tried to do is be very transparent, and I think that gives us the benefit of the doubt, because we've never tried to pull the wool over anyone's eyes and say, hey, here's what we're doing, and then behind the scenes we're doing something else. And I think from a fan standpoint, I hope that's an appreciation for, we'll put our cards on the table, and, I think our fan base now understands that we're going to try a lot of new things, both in the stadium with technology, through our, Euphoria application, through whatever it might be. And you're the guinea pig sometimes, and it may work great, it may not, but that helps us get better. And I think fans have an appreciation for that, and people in general do. I think they like to be – they want to feel part of that. They want to feel like they're helping mold what it is that Sporting has become. And I don't see that ever going away. And I think it's something that we talk about every day. We're very cognizant of where we're at and what we've achieved. And I think Rob has challenged us all at the beginning of this year that – we had the All-Star game last year in our stadium. We had a World Cup qualifier with the U.S. men's team, and then we hosted the Cup and won all in our venue. So that's hard to beat, but he's challenged us that we've got to do better this year, and we're well aware of that.
Well, we're going to take just a short break, but we'll continue our conversation about Sporting KC when we return. Central Standard returns in just a moment. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jeremy Bernfeld. Today we're talking to Jake Reed. He's Sporting KC's Chief Revenue Officer. Jake, thanks for coming on the show.
No problem. Good to be here.
We're also speaking with Thad Bell. He's the Managing Editor of the Daily Wiz, SB Nation's Sporting KC blog. Thank you, Thad.
Thank you.
And Sean Dane is leader of the KC Cauldron, which is a coalition of Sporting KC fan groups. Thank you, Sean.
It's wonderful to be here.
Wonderful indeed. If you're just joining us, we've been talking about Sporting KC. The defense of the title, MLS Cup, starts Saturday in Seattle, and we'll be getting back to that soon. But we've also been exploring their leading business practices. So, Jake, when we talk about the growth of Sporting KC, we hear a lot about technology. There's Wi-Fi in the stadium, paperless ticketing systems, fan engagement on social media. So what is Sporting KC's strategy in terms of technology and leveraging that technology? And are you conscious of being leaders in the field of sports when it comes to technology?
Yeah, we are conscious, I guess, to start there. And I think it's something that is important to our ownership group. You look at Neil Patterson, Cliff Illig, obviously the co-founders of Cerner. That's kind of how they've built their business. And Rob Heineman, our CEO, is constantly trying to push the curve on that. And I think our underlying issue, or how we approach technology, is we want it to tie the fans closer to the team. And that's really the baseline for everything that we do. Is we want that interaction, the engagement, the feedback. Our base is a millennial group. Our season ticket base is 30 years old, which is unbelievably young when you look across pro sports. So it's that millennial group. They're on the smartphones in stadium. They want to use the Wi-Fi. They want to have instant access to replay, stats, whatever's going on. So I think our underlying goal there is to just bring the fans and give them the access that they normally couldn't get.
So, in fact, Sporting KC was so successful at developing useful technology for sports that the organization spun off a company designed to sell that technology, export that technology and that know-how to other teams. So it's called Sporting Innovations. It has an office in the Crossroads. What kinds of lessons and projects from Sporting KC are you bringing elsewhere?
Yeah, almost all of them. I think the way that Sporting Innovations has utilized Sporting Kansas City specifically and Sporting Park is, we're kind of the living lab. So I think we like to be kind of the test arena for whatever we're launching. And again, kind of back to my earlier point around the fans is we've been very transparent with that. And when we launch something new, with any technologies, there's always going to be, bugs in the system. And I think helping those get worked out through our fan base has been great. And it allows us, when Sporting Innovations goes to roll that out to whether it's, Madison Square Garden or the Pac-12 or whoever they're working with, that, they can bring a product that has been refined here in Kansas City and then deploy it elsewhere.
So those are – you mentioned, you know, the Pac-12, Madison Square Garden. We're talking about big names. I believe it was the Utah Jazz NBA yep. team. How successful has that company been?
Fantastic. I think if you consider you know, they've only been around for really just under 2 years and have recently just really started diving in. The client base they've already had is tremendous. I think the feedback from the NBA, from the college arena has been tremendous. So I think that's – you know, they're on a very accelerated path right now.
Sean, as a fan and as somebody who goes to these games, how much does technology play a role? You know, is that I think sometimes it can be overblown. Everybody's got an app. Who cares?
I'm not the best guy to ask about this because during games, I don't engage in the. I say the Sporting Euphoria app. It's a great app. I very rarely use it at the game because I'm paying attention to the game. But I think that. What is exciting is that they have found a way in a different sports landscape to get people more connected to what's happening on the field via the phone that they're staring at the entire time anyways. And I certainly commend them for the technological, you know, advances that they've done. The other side of it, social media side and all of that has been just as phenomenal for us as a fan supporters and organization group as it has been for their growth. You know, what was it, 5 years ago when I started the Cauldron Twitter account and we hit 200 people and I thought, man, we have a voice
we've made
to
it.
Everyone. And I think we just passed 11,000. And so that reach and people that are paying attention is incredible. And it certainly makes what we do as far as organizing the fans much easier. I mean, you look at the fact that we were able to get 400 people to travel to Seattle this weekend for the game, and it's all done through social media engagement. And this continues to happen more and more. That part is really amazing to me. I do enjoy going back and looking at all the heat maps and things like that are integrated into MLS apps and stuff like that. I have used the stadium Wi-Fi, and it's great. I mean, certainly appreciate all the technological advances. As long as that product continues to push people's eyes back towards the field. And I think that that's the line that they have found, which works with the kind of applications they've put out now, because it's all directed at putting them back into the action.
Jake, while clearly extremely successful here in Kansas City, especially recently with the on-field product in particular, and you know, you draw over 19,000 fans. I mean, it's absolutely a real thing. But at the same time, we're still talking about smaller numbers than other sports. We're still talking about, you know, we'll get into some of the other issues about spreading the brand. But how easy is it to be this kind of test case, to try new things out when you are the little guy? I mean, you're a little bit more agile. You're not trying to move this giant ship of an 81 home game baseball season, those kinds of things. You know, is there an element to that, to be able to experiment with a smaller scale operation?
Yeah, you know, we love it. I mean, my background, I've worked for a couple different NBA teams before coming here, and you know, we don't have a lot of restrictions from a league level, where if you look at MLB, NFL, NBA, there's a lot of league regulations that don't allow those teams to be very nimble. And I think we've used that to our advantage. We're well aware of the challenges that some of those other folks in town have. And, you know, we take advantage of it. We've got a young league. We've got a young team. And I think our brand is very, you know, we're aggressive. We're a little brash. We want to be out there pushing the envelope a little bit. But that allows us to try those things and not be afraid to make a few mistakes along the way. And we just view that as it just helps us get better with whatever we do next.
I took to the Sporting KC Reddit and asked fans there what they would ask you, Jake, if they had the chance. And so one of them in particular, this was a popular question, came up with this idea. So the team stadium used to be called Livestrong Sporting Park, in partnership with Lance Armstrong's Livestrong Charitable Foundation. And obviously Armstrong, the cyclist, has been disgraced and the team dropped the name from the stadium. Are there any plans to sell naming rights for the stadium and switch that up?
Yeah, was that from Neil Patterson, that email there? Yeah, you know, we're definitely working on it. I think that's my sole task right now, and my biggest target to chase down is the naming rights. It's obviously in sports, that's a huge revenue stream for us, but more importantly, it's one of your marquee partners. And I think if you look at Ivy Funds on the kit and what that has meant for us, it's been tremendous. And I think working with Tom Butch and Laurie Dorsey at Ivy Funds has been tremendous for us and really opened a lot of avenues both personally and professionally to help grow the brand. And I think the naming rights is that same type of partnership. So, yeah, we're absolutely looking for a partner right now. We've got a couple of good conversations going on, but unfortunately, nothing.
Have you considered Central Standard Sporting Park?
Or just Jeremy Bernfeld Sporting Park?
Let's have a conversation.
Let's do that. We could have an extra – I won't say that we'll have an extra membership drive, but you never know. Well, let me another question that we got on Reddit that I thought was an interesting one, and this is a little bit more about the on-the-field question. But does the team have any plans, Jake, I'll start with you, to bring in a marquee player, someone that a casual fan may have heard of? Now, there are a few members already of the U.S. national team and some of the other national teams. So, and obviously on-field success, won the MLS Cup. But any plans for, you know, a David Beckham, a Thierry Henry, that kind of signing?
Probably not of that caliber. I think if you look at Peter Vermees and certainly the coaching staff and their philosophy, I think Peter is very much a guy who wants to get people in that fit his system and try to grow them from there. I think Matt and Graham would be a fantastic example of that. Two guys that
Matt Beisler, Graham Zusi,
came into our system and now they're staples on the U.S. team. So I'm not going to say that if the right guy came along, we wouldn't make a move at it. I think our ownership's been very transparent about, they're not afraid to spend the money if it's a good fit. But there's a lot of dynamics there. If you're bringing in a guy that's on $5 million a year like a Beckham and our guys are making, pennies on the dollar compared to that, there's a dynamic in the locker room you've got to consider as well.
So, Thad, you cover the team, and obviously Jake's here is in the front office, and we've heard no imminent plans per se. But as far as the on-field product, what do you look for this year, and do you think that they need another marquee signing? How does that look?
Yeah, I don't really think they need another marquee signing. I think they just keep tweaking and adding and growing and getting slightly better each opportunity. They did make a run on Michael Bradley. They made a serious offer. The rumor is $40 million. I don't know if that was true, but he ended up signing with Toronto.
And he's a U.S. player. Michael Bradley's on the U.S. national team, and he's been playing in Italy most recently and signed in the MLS with Toronto.
Right. He's playing with Roma. He's one of those recognizable names that maybe not the Beckham and Thierry Henry type of level, but a lot of the more casual fans that just watch U.S. national team will have known him. So they will make that run, but he's a player who would have fit the system. It wasn't that they were going after the name. They were going after the guy who would help Sporting Kansas City become a better team. They were willing to make that big name, that go for that, the spend the money if that was going to happen. I don't think they're going to go after just the random big name guy out there that's not going to make the team better overall.
Yeah, I mean, I would echo that. I think that's exactly how we look at it. And I think Peter would say the same thing if he was in here. I think it's really about the fit and do they fit the system, and less about what's the name on the back of the jersey. And I think from a dollar standpoint, we'd be willing to spend a lot against it in the case of a Bradley, if that was the right move. Unfortunately, that one didn't happen as much as we would have loved it to. But yeah, I think we'll always keep our eye open for who that guy might be.
But when they bring in players, they brought in like Claudio Bieler. He was the DP.
That's the designated player, able to spend a little bit more money on the player because the MLS salaries are so low.
Right, and that's the player that the team can spend extra money on that doesn't come from the league. When he came in and he was doing really well, he hit a dry spot. Vermees is not one that, because we're paying him a little extra money, he starts. If he's not doing what Vermees wants him to do, then he sits. He subs. He sits on the end. That's just kind of the way Vermees is. You're gonna play his system and be successful, or you're gonna sit or not even be in the 18. When he brings in other players, though, I think you'll see maybe other South Americans or players from Spain or players like that can come in and fit into the system. And when Vermees looks at a player fitting into the system, it doesn't necessarily from day one, but he's one who can 3 months from now, 6 months from now, make a big contribution. Benny Failhaber is a great example for last year. They signed him, traded for him, brought him in. He was very up and down throughout the year, but everything came together at the end of the year, and he was such a big contributor for the MLS Cup run.
So we've been talking a lot about the innovations at Sporting KC and the turnaround at Sporting KC, but the picture, of course, isn't all rosy. Television ratings, I believe, are up, even to 10 or 11 times what they were drawing in 2010. But they're still far below what the Royals draw, even when the Royals aren't playing well. So the MLS and Sporting KC, they don't make the kind of money that other pro sports do, right, Jake? I mean, there's still kind of a long way to go there.
Absolutely. I think TV is the focal point of both us on a local level and certainly the MLS as a whole. Our TV deal is up after this year from a league standpoint, so it's a huge year going into 2015. Locally, we've just announced a new TV partner this year with 38 The Spot. We feel incredibly good about that partnership. I think they're going to be huge partners promoting us, getting us out there. And listen, our stadium is full, which is a great problem to have. And I think you look at where can you grow the fan base and your reach, and certainly TV is there. We're second in the league in TV ratings, but to your point, it's all relative. We've got a long way to go. But I think with 38 The Spot as a partner, it's going to be a great year for us.
According to a report released last year by Forbes, Sporting KC, they had Sporting KC worth over $100 million, which, according to them, was the ninth most valuable franchise in the league. So obviously that's the good news. But Forbes also said the team is just one of 10 teams, just 10 teams in the MLS that has an operating profit. So how healthy is the MLS, and is the league's health something that worries you as the chief revenue officer here at Sporting KC?
No, I think the league couldn't be healthier right now. If you look at the expansion that's going on with MLS, and Don Garber, the commissioner, has been very open about where he wants the league to be by 2022. And I think, we've got another New York team coming in with Manchester City backing him and the Yankees. So you've got two massive brands there. You've got Orlando City, which is going to be fantastic coming on board. And, I think the league continues to grow. So, I think the operating income is slightly deceiving. A lot of that's an ownership play. Some people, are going to just spend more and go after it. And Toronto's a great example. I mean, they've spent $100 million in players this year. There's no chance they're going to make money. But, the league couldn't be healthier from a financial standpoint.
And I would also say that you have to look at the environments. As the teams evolve and get into soccer-specific stadium situations, all of that picture becomes better. And teams that are still on that downside in New England and D.C., Chivas, they're all making efforts to change that. And the league and the sport itself continues to grow at rates that I think are just compounding at this point.
So soccer fans here in the U.S. are kind of to that point, are more than tired of hearing people ask the question, will soccer ever catch on in the United States? I think it's clear that it has caught on, and certainly one of the most popular youth sports. But it's still worth acknowledging that soccer, and at least professional domestic U.S. soccer, isn't as popular as the NFL or college football or the NBA or as ingrained here as Major League Baseball. So kind of almost a mixed bag there, Jake. What's your perspective on that age-old question?
Yeah, I mean, I think the short answer is, we're 20 years old as a league next year. So I think we're just infants still in terms of the development of where we're at. You look at all those leagues you mentioned, they've been around for 65-plus years. So you've got generations of fans who have come up through there, and we don't have that yet. And I think if you look at where we are at, where we will be at 20 years versus the NFL, the NBA, and all those guys, we're light years ahead of where they were at that point in time. So I feel great. It's it's a what have you done for me lately society, so people want it now, and we understand that, and certainly we would love it as well. But those things take time. You need kids to grow up supporting the team, being part of the organization, and that's where you really see the growth.
Sean?
And I would say you look and watch what happens during this World Cup cycle this summer. 4 years ago when we had the World Cup, you saw 12,000 people in downtown Kansas City to watch a U.S. game. And if you had said 4 years before that was going to happen, people would have laughed at you. This is the strength of soccer in the United States is very strong, and it continues to grow through the engagement of fans. It's helped by organizations like Sporting that really takes that to base, but the fans are really pushing this. And you also have to look that no other professional sport ever had to deal with actual movement against the sport. I mean, soccer for many years was told not to participate because it was a foreign game, right? It was an un-American game that for, 50 years that took place, 100 years that took place. So no other sport had to compete with that. And now all of those tables have changed. And as I think if you look at the attention span of at least myself and people younger than me sitting down to watch a 5-hour baseball game or sitting down to watch a 90-minute soccer game, that dynamic completely changes. And for the younger generation, it's more and more engaging of a sport to participate in than football or baseball. And I'm still a season ticket holder for the Chiefs. I mean, I'm not talking badly about other sports. I love baseball. I just, the 90 minutes of soccer is far more engaging to me than the other sports these days.
So I don't want to let us leave here without talking a bit about the game day experience at Sporting Park, which is really different from other pro sports teams. You know, obviously every team has their passionate fans, you know, whether it's long-suffering Royals fans or crazy Chiefs fans. But with Sporting KC, the fans are much closer to the field physically. It's a soccer-specific stadium. They're really right on top of the field. And there's a big section that's jumping around, that's chanting, that's hanging banners. I'd love for all of you to talk about the experience a little bit, but let's start with you, Sean Dane, as the leader of the KC Cauldron. Why is being a fan of Sporting KC different than going to a game elsewhere? You mentioned the Chiefs.
I think that traditionally the environment around the game of soccer is more vocal than versus baseball, you know. But I very much remember, you know, 2003 sitting around in Arrowhead thinking, man, if we could just convert, you know, 10% of Chiefs fans over to loving the Wizards, this place would be insane, because it's that same passion of a fan that participates in soccer. It's not a, you know, a sport specific thing. It's the passion that comes from the city for their team, and that is more than evident in this city behind all of its sports. It was, I really think it was just a matter of focusing in an environment that was conducive to it, that was the right size for it, that focuses on the game, highlights the experience. And from there, us being able to say, look, here's what we're going to do. We're going to sing this song. We're going to get together and we're going to paint this giant banner. Like, the participation and buy-in to that aspect of what we do as fans, it's far easier when they're coming to an environment that's conducive to that. We certainly did that before the new stadium. And we were just a much smaller scale, you know, and people still came. And when they, you know, the growth of what has happened within the Cauldron organization, the supporters associations, really takes place one fan at a time. It's me bringing somebody, it's them bringing somebody, them bringing somebody else, and everybody getting that first taste of like, wow, this is incredibly exciting to be part of. And then they're hooked and they buy into the cult, or, you know, however you want to refer to it.
So, Thad, we only do have a minute or two left, but what role do fans play in this franchise here? Is there a particular, you know, home field advantage in Kansas City, or is it just this passionate soccer fans everywhere?
Well, I do think it's passionate soccer fans everywhere. I mean, there's some other stadiums in MLS that are amazing experiences to be at, but in Kansas City, it's a different experience than any of the other sports in Kansas City. Like, just to add on to kind of what Sean was saying, but the fans in Sporting Park are more involved because of those chants. That first year, partway through the year, when a chant spread pretty much all the way around the whole stadium, I think Sean probably broke down into tears, and I know I was feeling chills, and it was that, you know, 18,000 plus people all together pulling for that team and all right on top of that game.
Jake, I don't want to drop this. We only have about a minute left. But as far as the future goes, and we've talked a lot about how the fans play a role here, how do you see that this year and into the future?
Yeah, I mean, I think, listen, this is an easy question for me because these guys do all the hard work. I think we built a great stadium. We've got a lot of great spaces, whether you're a fan coming out wanting to be in the member section cheering, whether you want to be a premium or just bring your family. And I think that will never go away. We want it to be an inclusive space. And ultimately, you know, when these guys show up on game day, that's really what makes a difference. And for us, that's always what's going to separate us as a club.
Well, we will continue to watch. And as we said, Sporting KC starts their title defense this Saturday with a match in Seattle. We are, however, out of time for now, so I want to thank our guests. Jake Reed is Sporting KC's Chief Revenue Officer. Jake, thanks for coming on the show.
No problem. Thanks, Jeremy.
Thad Bell is the Managing Editor of The Daily Wiz, SB Nation's Sporting KC blog. Thanks for coming in, Thad.
No, thank you.
And Sean Dane is leader of the KC Cauldron, which is a coalition of Sporting KC fan groups. Thanks for being on the show, Sean.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Tune in tomorrow for Central Standard when we talk about the growing craft beer scene of Kansas City. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Christy Garten with Kate Baxendale. Stay with us for up to date with a delicious preview of Kansas City Star's food issue plus mushroom hunting. I'm Jeremy Bernfeld. You can find me on Twitter at JeremyHPM. This is Central Standard on KCUR.